And welcome to the Drew Allen Show. This is, of course, Drew Allen, the Millennial Minister of Truth. For years now, we have heard a number of different things regarding the border from the Biden administration. One thing we've heard, of course, is outright denial. There's no crisis at the border. The border is not open. Tell that to the 10 million plus illegals that will have invaded the country by the end of Biden's first term. And then, of course, we've heard more recently in the last month or so that, in fact, yes, there is a problem, a crisis at the border. However, it is not Biden's fault. It's Trump's fault, and it's the Republicans in Congress. It's their fault because Joe Biden, they say, he has said, can't do anything. It takes an act of Congress, don't you know, to do what? To enforce the laws that are already on the books? No. Joe Biden, that's actually your job. Well, lo and behold, the border issue is of such significance in this 2024 election. As a matter of fact, it's so unignorable and it is so upsetting to the bulk of the American people that it could sink Joe Biden's reelection chances alone. And so now, all of a sudden, Joe Biden has the audacity via leaks from the press, and they're not really leaks. They want this to be there. Leaks may not be the correct word, but for example, an Axios headline, scoop. Biden plans order to limit southern border crossings by end of month. But I thought that Joe Biden couldn't do anything to secure the border. Now, let me go on and just read you this. Your blood should be boiling by the end. Just some poll quotes. President Biden used an interview with Spanish language broadcaster Univision that aired Tuesday to send a massive signal that he plans to issue an executive order to dramatically limit the number of asylum seekers who can cross the southern border. But they just told us that he wasn't capable of doing this. This, as a matter of fact, should be the biggest story in America, in my opinion. Perhaps after the story that Joe Biden could be perhaps a pedophile. Ah, nope, that's not hyperbole. That's not me spreading some kind of a vicious tabloid gossip. We know, as a matter of fact, that Amy Harris was just sentenced to several months in prison for what? Stealing the property, the diary of Ashley Biden. And in that diary, Ashley Biden says that her father showered inappropriately with her as a young girl. Those are Ashley Biden's words. We know that's actually her diary because she's going to jail for stealing the diary. So after that story, perhaps, the fact that we have somebody in the Oval Office that perhaps showered inappropriately with his own young daughter, we have him, of course. Well, what do you glean from the fact that he actually is responsible for the open border? Well, obviously, he wanted this to happen. He's guilty of facilitating the greatest illegal invasion of the country in American history. So anyway, Axios is told that while it's not final, such an executive order is likely by the end of April. Why it matters, Axios says, we're told there's a fierce debate internally about the legality and politics of a Trump-like lockdown. But Biden briefed on polls of rising voter anger wants a dramatic step. The provision by design would restrict the ability of immigrants to claim asylum and doesn't require congressional approval. In other words, the Biden administration has been lying to you, certainly over the last few months, but over the past four almost years about the border. We have the absolute worst human beings amongst us that are ruling over us. We're being ruled by our inferiors. And these policies in general, whether it's illegal immigration, you were seeing in particular in Democrat-run cities the absolutely devastating impact of these Democrat policies. Places like San Francisco, not far away from where I live, for example, once, of course, were crown jewels of America in terms of their beauty and tourism. And now they've been reduced to, I don't want to be mean here, but it's a dumpster fire. And it is, of course, a result of Democrat Party policies. And I want to bring on in just a moment to join me Yvette Corcoran, who is actually running as a Republican in San Francisco District 11 there for the California State Senate. Now, a lot of Americans falsely believe that, you know, policy can't make a difference, you know, that these problems that are happening in cities like San Francisco or New York, that, you know, they aren't the result somehow of the very politicians who are creating the policies that facilitate and create these situations. But of course, it is the Democrat Party that has a stranglehold on California and, of course, cities like San Francisco that are responsible for this. And so I want to bring Yvette on to discuss what's going on in San Francisco, what has inspired her to run, and what we can do to save our great cities.
Hi, how are you? Thank you, Drew, for having me. I'm so grateful.
Hey, Yvette, I am so thrilled to have you on, too, to talk about what's happening in San Francisco. You live there. You're a longtime resident. A lot of people read things in the news, and sometimes the feeling is, well, you know, that may not really be happening, or that's just an isolated incident. I mean, what have you seen happen to San Francisco, certainly over the last 4 years?
Well, San Francisco has steadily declined over quite a few years, but I think more rapidly in the last 4 years. We are seeing crime skyrocketing, neighborhoods really decimated. Our downtown is lost. You know, we store after store after store is closing. People are fleeing. People are afraid to come here. And it's really not safe in any neighborhood, day or night. We have organized crime. We have people dying on the streets, which is, we live in the United States of America. This should not be happening anywhere. And it's become normal here in San Francisco. People just walk over bodies and you really don't know if they're dead or alive. In some neighborhoods, it really looks like a third world country. And then, you know, in addition to the crime, then we have San Francisco is probably one of the most expensive cities to live in our nation. We're paying the highest taxes here in California. Our children are suffering in the schools. They're ranked of the lowest in the nation in reading, writing, and arithmetic. We have a lot of issues here in California and San Francisco, Bay Area.
Well, and the government, of course, in California at large, obviously, you can't blame Republicans for anything. I'm not saying Republicans are perfect. Obviously, no one's perfect. But Republicans can't be blamed for what's happened to California because they don't hold any power in the state, the ability to do anything. And the same is true in a city like San Francisco. And you know, the thing about, you know, I just want to tell this anecdotal story as well, because it's, you know, it's true. I was in San Francisco about a year ago or so, and I was taking an Uber, and the Uber driver had lived there. It was a female. She'd been there for 20 years, I think she said, or thereabouts. And she told me that she was planning to move to L.A. because San Francisco had become so dangerous that she couldn't live there anymore. And I didn't say to her, I wanted to say, well, you know, you might want to look outside of the state, not at Los Angeles. I don't know that Los Angeles is a great improvement over San Francisco necessarily. But the point is, you know, real people, real Americans, people who love that city and call it home and do not want to leave it, do feel like they're being forced to leave for all of the factors you've mentioned. And, you know, San Francisco to me is almost like a canary in the coal mine in the sense that, you know, with the Kate Steinle death, you know, during the Obama administration, for example, you know, that's a sanctuary city. And now immigration, of course, has become a big issue, illegal immigration, certainly for the American people. And it may cost itself alone, apart from all the other economic catastrophes and everything else caused by the Biden administration, it might be an issue. But, you know, I mean, San Francisco has been a sanctuary city. I mean, what is happening there in terms of the illegal immigration and the burden on the city and the residents?
Well, I mean, I think illegal immigration is affecting our entire state. The illegal immigrants are receiving more benefits than taxpaying citizens here in California. They're receiving free health care. We just learned of a bill think it's 18 Assembly Bill 1840, which is beautiful in a sense that it's going to help low income or moderate income families, and they receive, you know, 20% deposit for first time buyers. But there's also a clause in this Assembly Bill that they can't discriminate on citizenship. So, you know, much of this funding could be going to illegal migrants as well. We know that human trafficking is skyrocketed. It's the number two, it's number two moneymaker in the world. California being ranked highest, I think, in the nation. We have many, many issues. The fentanyl, the drugs that are coming over our border. Just this, I believe it was this week, there was a fentanyl bill that was killed in one of the committees because our supermajority Democrats want to give more preference, more security to our fentanyl dealers than our citizens of the United States and of California. I mean, it's horrific.
Yeah, everything seems to be backwards. And, you know, no one can deny that it is the Democrat Party, in fact, that's behind all of these changes. And the Democrat Party as a whole, certainly in California, Scott Wiener, who you're running against, I mean, these individuals seem to support the antithesis of course, what makes American great. But, you know, illegals, for example, are given priority over American citizens. Criminals are treated with more sympathy than the victims. And criminals, of course, seem to be given special treatment in many cases. In San Francisco, of course, you know, it's permissible now. I mean, theft is legal as long as it's under below a certain figure. And we've seen what this has done. When you legalize crime, even big box retailers are forced to shut down and leave. You know, I want to touch on something because, you know, the Democrats obviously nationally are trying to drum up support over abortion because all of their other policies have been failures. Now, abortion, there's no point in even talking about it in California because it is what it is. So it's a non-issue actually in the state. But, you know, while Democrats want to make that an issue, you know, there's another more significant issue that affects somebody like me. I'm a parent, you, other parents out there, which is the gender theory that is being pushed by exclusively the Democrat Party. And, you know, basically, one thing I wanted to bring up and then let you take the floor is I find it ironic that with the abortion issue, for example, the pro-abortion, I would say the radical pro-abortion advocates on the left, for example, they would suggest that the mother, for example, has absolute authority over the child in her body. So she has the right to determine whether or not the child lives or dies. That is the ultimate power that she's given, right? My body, my choice. Now, once that child actually comes out of the womb and becomes 4 years old or 5 years old or 10 years old or 11 years old, well, suddenly the child has all the authority because in the state of California, they're pushing bills, for example, that would claim that if a parent were to do their job and parent, and perhaps prevent a child who can't even drive themselves to a doctor, prevent them from getting hormone therapy and changing their gender, if you will, well, that parent could be considered guilty of abuse. Is this happening in California? Am I getting this right?
Yes, you are. And yes, they did attempt that. So Lori Wilson, Assemblywoman Lori Wilson, and Senator Scott Wiener brought forward a bill, Assembly Bill 957, which would have encouraged judges to give preferential custody to a parent who will affirm a child. We're seeing that, you know, we know that California is a sanctuary state for gender. It's a transgender sanctuary state. We're seeing that parents are being kept out of what's being taught in the classrooms. There was one bill that ended up failing, and I don't recall the number because there's been so many, But that one would have made it to where a parent could have either been arrested or fined, arrested up to a year in county jail or fined, I think up to $1,000, if they attended maybe a school board meeting and spoke out against what was being taught in the schools. So it is a little crazy here in California. And many of these bills that are being brought forward that affect our children are being authored or co-authored by Senator Scott Wiener.
And to my knowledge, and by the way, this I just want to point out, just as a parent, as honestly, just as a human being, it is absolutely disgusting what is happening. And it is almost like an assembly line for transgenderism. If you're 18 and over and you want to make decisions, okay, that's fine. But you're talking about the innocent, precious children, like my children, your children, other people's children out there. And what is happening by design, of course, if you put together exactly what you're saying, there's no doubt about this. They don't want parents to be able to parent. They are taking our children hostage in schools. They're filling their heads with gender theory and suggesting that they should begin this transition process. And then they are criminalizing effectively. That's where they're moving, criminalizing any kind of objection to that by the parents. So Scott Wiener and other Democrats are anti-parent. Now, it's kind of odd because to my knowledge, I have nothing against Scott Wiener's preference in terms of sexuality, but I don't believe that he's a parent. Is that correct?
To my knowledge, he is not a parent.
Yeah, so he has a lot of opinions about how parents should do their jobs, but doesn't seem to have the experience to do it. And I think this is one of the frustrating things for American citizens out there, is that you have representatives who know nothing about what they are pushing an agenda for. But this is true of most politicians anyway, right? That have no experience anywhere on the planet and they come in and push their ideology. Well, I mean, it seems like he's on the wrong side of everything. What was it that kind of, what was it that kind of inspired you? What was the thing that got you? Because look, I as a publicist, people that, as someone who works behind the scenes in politics too, I mean, the choice to run for office, whether it's the California State Senate, like you are, national politics, it is a painful endeavor. It's very, very hard, and it is a sacrifice. Maybe not if you're a Democrat running in friendly territory, but somebody who wants to speak the truth, it's a big sacrifice. I mean, where did this come from?
You know, it really stemmed from, it's multiple things. You know, I think when we saw the world shut down due to this COVID issue. We lost our freedoms. Our children were suffering in the schools. People lost their jobs. People lost their lives. And more information is coming out now. There are some of us who kind of knew what this agenda was back then. And a lot of the evidence is coming out now. So I'd say it was the removal of our freedoms, the shutdown, loss of job, us not being able to provide for our families if we didn't go along with what our government was forcing. Public safety, for me personally, there was a very violent attack in my family, and a person was nearly bludgeoned to death on the streets of San Francisco in broad daylight. And when the assailant was released from jail 11, 12 days later, went back to the scene of the crime, which is where my children live. And I had to keep my children in hiding for multiple weeks to months because it was not safe for them to return home. You know, every person should be able to walk the streets in San Francisco or any city and not fear to be bludgeoned to death in broad daylight. And then third, there's four factors, really. Third is going to be, you know, we live in one of the most beautiful cities in the world. People aspire to come here. It's an enormous tourist attraction. And now people are fleeing. We can't bring people here. And it's so unaffordable. And what they're trying to do in terms of just the economy, the policies, those need to be fine-tuned. And then fourth is the assault on our children. When our children are ranked of the lowest in the nation. They cannot read, write, or do arithmetic to grade level. And then this gender ideology is being forced in the schools. It's not an option. It would be one thing if it was an elective and people and children opted in to this. This is being forced. And there's no opt out. Even when parents or children want to opt out of it, they're not allowed. This is dividing families. This is harming children. Excuse me. We know that for these children who are being confused, who have gender confusion, we know that many of them have some sort of mental development issue. Many are, about 30% have some sort of form of autism. We also know that the other majority of them have either been sexually or physically assaulted. And with all of this over-sexualization of our children, it's no wonder that children are being harmed. So we need to take a pause, because some of these children who are going down this path may have been abused, may have been raped, and that is not being properly addressed. Yes, they're going to see therapists, but the therapists are being retaught to, therapists and physicians are being retaught to affirm children's gender confusion automatically. I know a particular mom who is going through this with her daughter, and her daughter was gender confused, and with love and compassion, you know, has become comfortable with her own natural body. But now digging deeper, this girl was probably assaulted by somebody in her community. So we really need to take a pause for a minute. And to your point, what people want to do with their body when they're of age, and what of age is, you know, is it 18? Is it 21? Is it 24 when your frontal lobe is fully developed? Any one of those ages is far better than 12, 14. When we have perfect body parts and people are having double mastectomies or amputating their penis, this is not okay. If a child came in who was right-handed and said, you know what, I think it's really cool to be left-handed, why don't we amputate my right arm so I can start using my left? Find me one surgeon who's going to do this. It's insane. So all I'm asking is, let's take pause. Let's take pause. What teenager do we know that knew exactly who they were as they were developing? I myself, and pretty much anybody I know who is a young adult or adult, struggled with who they are. What group do they belong to in high school? Being a teenager is brutal. And I think it's even more challenging now with all the social media, social contagions, trying to fit in, go along to get along. It's painful. It's painful to watch. So instead of fueling this confusion, dividing families, we need to be loving our children. For this, the Senate bill that I was talking about before, when they were trying to remove children from their parents because they will not affirm, it's insane. There is nobody who loves a child more than a parent. We will lay down our life for our children. The teachers are not going to, well, in some instances, there have been some teachers who've done that, but on the majority case, teachers, administrators, they spend the 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, 1 year, for 1 year, but it's not a lifetime of love, passion, compassion, protection, ensuring that your child is developing and moving on in life, to succeed in life. It's just insane. So,
well, it's a created crisis. It's a created crisis, absolutely. There's nothing controversial. Everything that you've said can be backed up by countless studies, by the way. We know that these children regret it at the end of the day. And look, the teachers and people that are pushing this gender theory, whether it's Scott Wiener supporting this and other people, I mean, you know, I mean this sincerely. I mean, these individuals are predators themselves, because you are taking advantage of young people who don't have developed minds, people who can't buy cigarettes, can't drink, can't drive themselves, again, to the doctor to even have these procedures done. But you're saying if the parent doesn't drive you to get this procedure done and affirm it, you could potentially take the child away. What is abusive is the allowance of this to continue in our public schools. And this didn't happen that long ago, even when I was growing up in school. And I mean, you know, I have this here. I mean, yes, the bill you're talking about, this proposed bill, it treats a parent's refusal to affirm their child's gender identity as against the child's health, safety, and welfare. It is your job as a parent to determine what is in the best interest of your child. You are their protector of their health, safety, and welfare. That's your responsibility. And for somebody like Scott Wiener to support a bill like this, I mean, I don't know what that says about Scott Wiener and where his head is at, but this is clearly an evil agenda, and he supports it wholeheartedly.
Well, not only does he support it, he's written many other bills that push this issue as well. So Senate Bill 107, that makes California a sanctuary state for the gender-affirming care. There's 24 other states in our, I think it's 24 other states in our country that have halted minors moving forward with gender-affirming care. So now those children can come to California and receive their treatments here. Not only did he write that bill, he also wrote the Senate Bill 407, which is basically a foster care discrimination bill. So these children who are coming from other states, or children who are being removed from their parents here in this state because they won't affirm, they need adults taking care of them. They need some sort of foster care family. So what this bill has done is, if foster care families don't go along with this program and affirm gender-affirming care, they are no longer qualified to be a foster care family. We have men who are identifying as women being locked up into prisons with women. I mean, they're stuck in a jail cell, and women are being assaulted in prisons. They're being impregnated. What happens with that child when these women become pregnant? I want to go back to the whole portion with these children and being gender confused. There's a study that shows that of many of these children who are gender confused, about 80% of them, if left untouched, meaning no hormone blockers, no surgeries, no social transitioning, they become comfortable within their own natural body by the time they reach adulthood, maybe 24. Of that 80% of children who then become comfortable in their natural body, they're finding, the study also reflects, that an upper portion of 60% of those children later figure out that they're gay or lesbian. So this is not only an assault on our children, but this is also an assault on the gay and lesbian community, because, you know, they fought for so many years for their rights, for equality, being gay and lesbian. And now they're being forced, encouraged to transition their bodies. So this is really an ultimate attack on that community as well.
Yeah, this is an assault on many, many different groups of people. And the left, of course, likes identity politics. Well, they are assaulting many of the groups that they have divided into these identities and assign these identities. I mean, it's outrageous. I mean, it's a pretty clear choice in San Francisco based on how things are going that people ought to vote Yvette based on pure sanity, as a matter of fact, as a barometer. You know, in terms of fundraising, things like that, are there places people can go right now to donate to your campaign?
Absolutely. So you would go to Yvette for Senate, and it's the word for, so Yvette, F-O-R, Senate.org to donate, to volunteer, to find out what we're doing. You know, I wanted to mention that this weekend at the state capitol, we are gathering for the Protect Kids CA ballot initiative. My friend Aaron Friday is the co-author for this ballot initiative. And what this initiative does is require school notification to parents when children are having confusion. It also protects girls and women's sports. We're seeing boys and men competing in women's and girls sports, and women and children, girls are being harmed. The third thing it does is it prevents the sterilization of our children. As I said, there are about 24 other states in our country that are not going along with the affirming care of children. And then we know that there are a few other countries, entire countries, that have shut it down or restricting it. I wanted to mention just a couple other insidious bills that Mr. Wiener is either authored or supporting. You know, we have Assembly Bill 1028. Most people probably don't know about this one, and it is in the works. They're working on this one, and as a registered nurse, I'm a mandated reporter. What this bill will do is remove mandated reporting of assault on women unless that assault is with a gun. So I want to just take pause on that and ask every person listening, is that acceptable? You know, mandated reporting, when people report harm to women, this is a safety off-ramp for them. This helps to save lives. And now they want to silence healthcare providers and other mandated reporters. Another bill that is just as insidious is Senate Bill 145, which this one removes the requirement for adults who have been convicted of sodomy from going on the sex registration list, so long as the age difference is 10 years. So basically, a 24-year-old can be harming a 14-year-old, be convicted, and Mr. Wiener, this bill passed, that they do not have to go on the sex registration list.
I mean, it's a pro-pedophile bill is what it is. I mean, that let's just call it what it is. So Scott Wiener's a fan of supporting pedophiles, it sounds like, based on the bill. I mean, that's what it is. If you're in support of that bill, once again, the criminal you are taking the side of. I mean, it's outrageous what's happening in California. And most people, I imagine, have no clue that this is happening in the state of California. And of course, if it's happening in California, you know that this is also a plan and the national level for the Democrat Party at large as well, because this is the proving ground and the trial, you know, area for Democrat testing on America. And you've seen how poorly it's gone. I want everyone to check out Yvette's website, and we're going to have you back on and keep everyone updated on this. I mean, this is a fascinating race, and it's an opportunity for San Franciscans and, you know, Californians at large to actually take a stand and try and take their state back. And great things are happening. And I'm just so happy that you've decided to step up and challenge Scott Wiener. It's remarkable that he's been able to get elected in the first place, but it's because he has D by his name, I guess.
Well, and what is exciting, and I want to give everybody hope, is right now I'm going and I'm meeting with non-party preference and Democrats, and California is not lost. I just want everybody to know that California is not lost. People are not happy with what's going on here. They're not happy with, even with as Democrat and liberal as San Francisco is, people are coming to me and saying, this is too much. We are a lifetime Democrat and we are now going to support you. So we have hope. I would love to chat another time because I think is going to be a very hot topic is the housing bills that are being brought forward. Housing, affordable housing, and what Mr. Wiener is bringing forward. So that could be for another time.
Absolutely. Well, Yvette, thank you so much for coming on here and sharing a little bit about your race and what you're fighting for. That brings me a lot of hope as a Californian who lives in your backyard here in Napa Valley. So I want to thank you again, and we'll keep everybody updated on your race.
Can I mention one thing I completely forgot?
Of course you can.
One other big deal that's happening on Tuesday at the state capitol is Senator Shannon Grove is bringing forward Senate Bill 1414, which talking about trafficking earlier, she brought forward SB 14 last year that made child sex trafficking a serious crime. Well, now she's bringing this bill forward to make child sex trafficking a felony. So if everybody can make their phone calls, send in their letters, or show up to the Capitol on Tuesday for the Senate public safety meeting, it is crucial to make sure that this bill gets forward. We need to protect our children at all costs.
Well, you heard it. If you're in California, you know what to do. Well, thanks again for keeping everybody updated and informed, and I'll be watching your race closely.
Thank you. I appreciate time. Yeah, have a great day.
Yvette, everyone, running for California State Senate in District 11. We're going to take a short break here, but when we get back, is the U.S. economy in a recession? All right, and we're back. As I left off, is the U.S. economy in a recession? The answer is partially yes, it is. Look, you can't believe anything the Biden administration has been telling you. They lie through their teeth about everything. And what we've learned more and more, of course, is that the reports of this epic, amazing job creation, well, it's a bunch of smoke and mirrors. It's garbage. I've talked about it pretty relentlessly, I think, and pretty often on here. But I want to get into this March jobs report to just really, really get this to take hold in your minds about what's happening here. So according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, right, the BLS, the U.S. economy added 303,000 jobs for the month of March. And they say the unemployment rate fell slightly to 3.8%. Well, we've heard this over and over and over again. However, when you actually dig deeper, you just lift up the hood and look beneath, this is actually cause for great alarm in the country. So this is a pattern that's been going on. So first and foremost, nearly all the job growth is part-time jobs. All the job growth is part-time jobs. So in other words, people are struggling so much in America right now that they're picking up additional jobs. That is not a good indication of economic growth at all. So to add to that, nearly a quarter of the new payroll jobs, they're government jobs. And it takes, I think, on average, 3 private sector employees via taxation, right? You tax them to pay one government job. That's not sustainable, and that's not good news. And the total number of employed persons has actually fallen by almost 400,000 jobs in 4 months. And 1.8 million full-time jobs have disappeared over the same period. So you're losing full-time jobs and gaining part-time jobs. Now let's get into this a little bit more. I hope this is making sense. It doesn't seem that complicated to me. It's pretty straightforward. So over the same 8 months in which we saw that total employed people had stagnated and that total jobs increased by 1.7 million, again, we only find growth in part-time jobs. So get this, since August of 2023, and this is thanks to the Epoc Times, total part-time jobs has increased by 1.4 million, all right? During the same time period, since August 2023, full-time jobs fell by more than 1.3 million. In other words, net job creation since August of 2023 has been all part-time jobs. Unbelievable. And of course, in March, 23% of the 303,000 jobs, part-time jobs created, they were government jobs. And, you know, I mean, you can look at the Philadelphia Fed, what's happening with the manufacturing index. That's in recession territory. Actually, countless. All these people doing manufacturing surveys, so there is no manufacturing happening. So the reality is the economy is as bad as you feel like it is. When you go to the grocery store and prices are unaffordable, when your heating bill or soon-to-be air conditioning bill is unaffordable, those things are real. They're happening. You know, the loss of sleep and the extra 4 hours of work you're doing each day at your second job, your part-time job that you didn't have to have under the Trump administration to survive, but you now need under the Biden disaster economy, that's real. You actually are at that part-time job. You are driving that Uber or Lyft. That's not the Matrix. That's real, and that's because of Joe Biden and this administration. But, of course, what is the Biden administration doing to resolve this? Well, they are lying about it. Now, if I were to ask you, what is, in your opinion, like how would you define a healthy U.S. economy? What would your definition of a healthy U.S. economy be? Well, it would be American citizens at full employment that are making a comfortable amount of money to survive and, of course, even save. That would be a healthy economy to me. American citizens that all have jobs who want them. And more importantly, are making enough money in those jobs to live comfortably in the United States of America, the greatest country in the history of mankind. But the Associated Press, the propaganda outfit for the left and Democrats, that is not how they define a healthy U.S. economy. You know, when the definitions don't support the Democrat Party, the Biden administration, what do? They just change the definition, right? The COVID vaccine doesn't actually prevent the contraction or spread of the COVID virus? Well, we will just change the definition of a vaccine so that bada boom, bada bing, now the worthless COVID vaccine is included. That's what they do. So here, according to the AP, the secret sauce for a healthy U.S. economy is Americans who lose jobs and illegals who get jobs. I kid you not, that is the definition of a healthy U.S. economy to the AP. They give this remarkable, remarkable story of illegals coming across the border and all their dreams are coming true. Now, meanwhile, your friend that's an American might be homeless. The veteran might be without any kind of health care or veterans assistance. But the illegal, don't worry. That hotel, you know, your tax dollars, those are going to the illegal. So anyway, I'll read you a few pull quotes. So having fled... How dramatic can I be? Let me try and re-engage my former Hollywood career as an actor and producer. Having fled economic and political chaos in Venezuela, Luisana Silva now loads carpets for a South Carolina rug company. She earns enough to pay rent, buy groceries, gas up her car, and send money home to her parents. Wow, it must be good to be Luisana Silva from Venezuela. Sounds like she's doing great. Unfortunately, the American people aren't even doing this well. So they go through this and they say, it's unbelievable what's happening here. But increasingly, the answer to our economic woes appears to be immigrants. And by immigrants, they mean illegals. Whether living in the United States, here they go, legally or not, the influx of foreign-born adults vastly raised the supply of available workers after a U.S. labor shortage had left many companies unable to fill jobs. Now, this is absolute BS. Primo, grade A BS. So we know, as a matter of fact, that the American is losing full-time jobs. They're shedding full-time jobs, and many Americans are taking part-time jobs to afford to pay their rent. And here they want to tell us that there's a shortage of American workers and we need these illegals to take the job. There aren't, Americans can't get jobs, apparently. There aren't. We're shedding full-time jobs and everything that's happening is a gig economy. But this is one way, this is what they want to tell you, this outrageous lie, to cover up for the illegal immigration at the border, this epic crisis. Now they want you to believe that 10 million plus illegal immigrants is actually improving the economy. I'm sorry, inflation just rose for the third month in a row. Americans are suffering just as they have been, and it continues to get worse and escalate. And yet they want you to believe that illegal immigration is the key to your success. Vote out the Democrat Party. Cue up cut one. Now, look, I'm no special pleader for Republicans either. I am a constitutional conservative. And first and foremost, I am like George Washington in the sense that I believe in the American citizen. I believe in the Constitution. When George Washington was elected president and served his two terms, there were not political parties. And as a matter of fact, in his farewell address, and I guess it was 1796, I could be off by a couple of years, I'll have to refresh my memory here, he told the American people to avoid, like the plague, political factions. Well, here we are. Your loyalty is to party over country. My loyalty is to the country and to the American citizen. And unfortunately, or fortunately, we have a two-party system. And the Republican Party is light years better than the Democrat Party, despite their failures. However, that said, because I am the millennial minister of truth, I want to play cut one, Speaker Johnson, and I want to destroy him. Go ahead, cut one.
When I was a member of the judiciary, I saw all the abuses of the FBI, the terrible abuses over and over and over, the hundreds of thousands of abuses. And then when I became speaker, I went to the SCIF and got the confidential briefing from sort of the other perspective on that to understand the necessity of Section 702 of FISA and how important it is for national security. And it gave me a different perspective. So I encourage all the members to go to the classified briefing and hear all that and see it so they can evaluate the situation for themselves. And I think some opinions have changed both ways, but that's part of the process. You got to be fully informed.
Have you been informed?
Excuse me.
Now, for the good of the country, I have resisted piling on Speaker Johnson. I've tried to give him a chance. I'm a realist. I understand how difficult his job is. But what he just said there is kind of a red line for me. Now, what happened here? We are talking about, and he acknowledges, that the FBI, of course, is guilty of absolute abuse of power. Absolute abuse of power. Now, not only was it reported not long ago that the FBI improperly used warrantless searches, that is these FISA that he's supporting renewing, this power he's going to give the FBI, well, they abused that more than 278,000 times in 2021. That's what the FISA court filings revealed. In other words, let me give you some background. U.S. citizens covered in that improper effort included people involved in the Capitol protest on January 6th, George Floyd protesters during the summer of 2020, and donors to a failed congressional candidate. The FBI has admitted that it made errors. Now, these were errors that were done intentionally. They just think they can get away with it, and they have so far. Director Wray has made clear the errors described in the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court's opinion are completely unacceptable. So they're not denying that this took place. So they've used FISA and abused it 278,000 times in just 1 year, in 2021. Now, on top of that, remember that the FBI admitted, because they apologized for abusing FISA, illegally surveilling Carter Page, who was working for the Trump campaign. So we know that the FBI is the enemy of the American people. Every tyrannical regime, and we are talking about a uniparty and a deep state here, certainly, But every tyrannical regime needs their brown shirts. They need the SS. They need the Gestapo. They need all these things. And the FBI is the tyrant's Gestapo in the United States of America today. It's imperative to have. History shows you it's always necessary when implementing tyranny in a country. The FBI cannot be trusted, and they're horrendous. And they are the enemy, as I said, of the American people. And yet, what did he just say there? Well, he went and talked to who behind closed doors? He got a brief. He talked to the FBI. He talked to the deep state, and they gave him the other perspective. Well, you know what? Speaker Johnson, what is he elected? Who is he elected to represent? The deep state and the FBI? Or is he elected to represent the American people and more specifically his own constituents? Well, the American people are being abused by the FBI. So it doesn't matter that he went behind closed doors and the FBI said, well, you know, even though we are abusing our power magnificently, well, we still, you know, are tasked with, protecting the country. What does it matter? You are abusing your power. You don't reward them with more power to continue to do this to the American people. So he heard the other. I don't give a you know what, a rat's A-double-S about the other perspective, Speaker Johnson, nor to the American people. I don't care about the FBI's perspective. How about the American people's perspective, which are staring into the abyss of totalitarianism, and the FBI is an absolutely integral part of reducing the American citizen to slaves. And Speaker Johnson, but don't worry, Speaker Johnson, he went and talked to the FBI because they can be so trusted, and they assured him, No, we need these FISA. Well, we know that we spied on the American people. We know that we're abusive and corrupt as all get out. But we also are needed. So anyway, so Speaker Johnson, I've got to say, you're absolutely wrong there. I have zero respect for you at the moment. You have a lot of work to do to earn back any respect from the American people. I call a spade, and you're an absolute moron. And you have just betrayed the American people in your little 30-second clip there, that speech, where you say, I talked to the FBI, I talked to them, and they assure me that despite all the evil they're doing, they also do good. So go screw yourself, Johnson. Screw yourself. All right, we're going to take one more short break. And when we get back, I want to talk about Hollywood, the Reacher star, and his absolute moronic lack of understanding about, you know, things like Christianity. We'll be right back. And we are back to close out. I don't typically deal with the Hollywood stories and things like that, but this one was of particular interest to me because, of course, as the Millennial Minister of Truth, I find actually a deeper significance and story and meaning and lesson in this. So Reacher star Alan Richson, he is attacking Christians who support Trump, who he calls a rapist. Now, this show's on Amazon. I've seen the first season. I enjoyed the first season. But he did this interview with a Hollywood reporter. And he has said that, you know, Trump is a rapist and a con man. And yet the entire Christian church seems to treat him like he's their poster child. And it's unreal. He doesn't understand it. Well, Alan, first off, I would have to ask you if you're familiar with the allegations that can be corroborated by a phone call by her own mother at the time of Joe Biden, I don't know how to say this, fingering an aide in a hallway when he was a senator. On top of that, of course, you have a diary by Ashley Biden. You can look this up, Alan. I know it's very difficult. I know that you read a lot of scripts and lines. So actually, I do know that you're capable of reading. So you can look this up and read it yourself. But Amy Harris was just put in prison for a few months for stealing Ashley Biden's diary. That means that it was Ashley Biden's diary. And in Ashley Biden's diary, what did Ashley Biden write about her father? That he showered inappropriately with her as a young girl. So Alan Richson, I would say, you know, How is it? I just don't understand it, Alan, how you can support a man who showered inappropriately with his own daughter, which potentially makes him a pedophile. So how is it, Alan, that you support a pedophile? Now, with regards to church, he says, Christians today have become the most vitriolic tribe. It is so antithetical to what Jesus was calling us to be and to do. Well, Alan, I know, again, you can read. You read lines and repeat them from memory for a living, and you're doing quite well at that, actually. You have a second season here of this show that you're on. So I would encourage you, Alan, to treat the Bible like a screenplay. Open it up and give it a chance. Try and read it. You can just go to the New Testament, actually, if you want, because that's what you're talking about, Christianity and Jesus. And I might point you to a couple chapters. For example, Matthew 12, 33 through 36, Alan, he says, you brood of vipers, how can you who are evil say anything good? For the mouth speaks what the heart is full of. A good man brings good things out of the good stored up in him, and an evil man brings evil things out of the evil stored up in him. So anyway, he also says, now go and sin no more. And of course, in Matthew 21, Alan, he entered the temple courts and drove out all who were buying and selling there. He overturned the tables of the money changers and the benches of those selling doves. It is written, he said to them, my house will be called the house of prayer, but you are making it a den of robbers. Alan, you have no idea what you're talking about. Please read the New Testament and then get back to us about Jesus. All right, that's all we have time for this Saturday. I'm looking forward to being back with you next week. God bless you all. Until then.